everybody. Welcome to episode 361 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
And this is Nick.
And this is the New Comics Wednesday episode for June 13th, 2018. So we're going to be talking about a few of the comics that we think are worth your time and you may want to check out at your local comic shop this Wednesday. So why don't you kick it off first, Nick? What are you going to start with?
All right. I'm going to start with Michael Cray by our friend Brian Hill. Penciler is N. Stephen Harris. Inker is Dexter Vines. And colorist is Ross Campbell. Can you give me a quick rundown on what the Wildstorm exactly is? It's like, is it like the ultimate, like some twisted universe or something?
So Wildstorm was Jim Lee's universe. It was, an interconnected superhero universe. I would say kind of heavily based in science fiction. So basically, you know, he started his own studio, at, you know, back in the day at Image. And then when DC bought Wildstorm from Jim Lee, he brought it over and they continued to print Wildstorm books as its own separate universe. And then at various times throughout DC's history, they've tried to incorporate the universes with varied degrees of success. Most recently, what they did was they had The Wildstorm by an idea from Warren Ellis, and it was just like a reboot where it seems like it's completely separate from the DC universe again. And that Wildstorm title is really, really awesome. And Michael Cray is kind of spun out of that. He showed up first in the Wildstorm title, but then they spun him off onto his own. So, yeah, I think it's a really great book.
Because at this point, he's basically then hunting people like this universe's version of the Justice League, basically. Because he's already fought the Flash, who was a crazy scientist with like a suit. And I forgot who else he already fought. But he's come into contact with Constantine in the previous issues leading up to this. And this issue, just on the first page, we're introduced to Diana. And Wonder Woman's on the cover, so it's obviously her. And in this version, it reminds me of the Ultimate Universe. Because here we have, she's like a corporate person who's funding Constantine's work. And when she disagrees with another guy about politics, then she stabs him through the table with her Wonder Woman sword.
Yeah, it's definitely a different take. Michael Cray was Deathblow in the original Wildstorm universe. Here, he's not going by, you know, he doesn't have a costume. I mean, not that Deathblow really did either, but he doesn't have a code name. He's just going by the actual given name, Michael Cray. But he has a very similar power set. And yeah, I mean, you're totally right as far as him taking on, you know,
twisted
Justice
versions,
members, but they tend to be bad, you know, bad. Like he fought Aquaman, he fought Flash.
That's right. Aquaman was like a mutant monster.
Yeah. So it's very different take, and it's a way for Brian really to have some fun. I think Wonder Woman here on the cover, she looks almost like Big Barda-ish to me.
So she does.
It's a really fun story. I think it's supposed to be 12 issues. Whether or not it sticks as far as, you know, Wildstorm universe sticks around. I mean, who knows? This is planned out for 12 for Michael Cray. It's planned out for 24 for the Wildstorm. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely a different take on the Wildstorm universe and a different take bringing these other versions of the regular DC heroes into this universe and treating them as kind of bad guys. But yeah, I love Constantine. Like when he first showed up, you thought, oh, he's going to be just another one like Flash, like Aquaman, that's a good guy gone bad in this version. But he seems to be, and again, suits Constantine much more in the gray area. Maybe leaning more toward being a good guy. He may be the normal DC Universe character that's most closest to the same morality that he has in the regular DCU.
But that's because he's already so close to the center, right?
Yeah. I mean, he's great. I think the series is awesome as well. I don't think enough people are talking about it. I think it's super underrated, and I think it's a heck of a lot of fun.
Yeah, I love it. And I got an exclusive. That's not an exclusive. It's on Twitter. Earlier this week, I tweeted Brian Edward Hill how much I enjoyed reading all in one sitting. And then he like said something about how it was super. I don't have the tweets in front of me. And I was like, oh, are you going to do Superman next? And he's like, actually, I'm not going to do Superman or Batman on the run because they want those. They don't want me messing. Tom King doesn't want me messing with that. So, but he said there might be a character from the super universe that would appear, but not Superman himself.
Yeah, that's interesting, because, I mean, what difference does it make? It's not the same version.
And I'll double look for these tweets while you're talking about your next one to make sure I'm not remembering fake memories again. But yeah, my first pick, in fact, my favorite book of the week was probably Michael Cray, number 8, because yeah, I'm a big Constantine fan, so seeing this version of him isn't too unlike the original I already enjoy. And I don't know, like I said, I read it issue 1 through 8 in one sitting and just enjoy the character Michael Cray. I enjoy the mission he's on and his twisted version of the Justice League. I would definitely recommend it. That would be my book of the week.
Wow, that's a great, I mean, there are so many good books this week. That's a, yeah, that's an interesting pick. All right, well, let me move on to my first pick. What am I going to talk about first here? Let's talk about Hawkman. You want to talk about books of the week. So Hawkman number 1 is my book of the week. Highly anticipated. Not that Michael Cray number 8 wasn't highly anticipated by maybe a certain subsection of the reading populace. But, you know, we had Robert Venditti, the writer, on the show to talk about his take on Hawkman a while back. And then we also had a couple of, I guess I'd say they're Hawkman scholars. A couple of the guys that run like Hawkman fan websites. Another gentleman who wrote the Hawkman Companion for Tomorrow's Publishing. So I definitely would consider them Hawkman experts. And we had them on for an episode where we did kind of a overall history, a spotlight on the character. So Hawkman has always been or recently been a character that is kind of tough to wrap your head around as far as continuity-wise, just because DC's kind of rebooted him and messed with his continuity so many times that he's got a high barrier to entry is how I would describe it. If you want to be a Hawkman reader and you want to understand, you know, the entire history of the character, it can be tough. It can be kind of daunting and you can feel like, well, there's no way I'll ever understand the character or understand all the different versions of the character fit together. And in a way, you're probably right, because all the different versions of the character don't necessarily fit together and make sense. So it makes it, you know, a little tougher to understand. But one of the things about the title and issue 1 that really struck me was the idea that Robert Venditti came up with to kind of fix Hawkman's continuity. It's one of those ideas where when you read it, it makes so much sense that you're like, okay, how come nobody did this before? Because it makes complete and total sense. And I think it's going to allow Robert Venditti to basically pull from any version of Hawkman, any previous iteration of the character. You know, he'll be able to make what he wants count. And I mean, basically he could make anything count, really. So I think it's a way for new readers to jump on and understand right away what's going on without having to go back and having vast knowledge of Hawkman. So I think it's a great idea and one of those like, oh, well, of course, like why didn't that happen before? The other thing I really liked about it is right off the bat, Venditti addresses something, and he talked about this in the interview about how Hawkman's all about flight, right? This guy's been alive for a long, long time, one of the oldest characters in the DCU, you know, within the universe itself. Of course, he's going to be like the best aerial combatant like ever because he's been around so long. So that makes sense. But what doesn't necessarily make sense is, so why is he an archaeologist going into all these tight spaces underground when really what he wants is the open air? So Venditti addresses that in the book right off the bat too. So really, really incredible start. The art by Brian Hitch, you know, it's widescreen. It's a lot of action. Early on in the opening part of the book where Hawkman's seeking a particular treasure. So I feel like it's very much linked into what happened recently with Dark Knight's Metal. I feel like with the recent Justice League that we'll be talking in depth about this coming Friday on a Justice League Spotlight, kind of relaunching and kind of flipping the DC Universe on its head. It's a perfect time to kind of have this, I don't want to call it a reboot or a relaunch, but this this new explanation for Hawkman. It's almost like a fresh start, right? And I think it's perfect timing for that for Hawkman, and I think the title was great. You know, I've come to expect great things from Robert Venditti, and this issue certainly didn't let me down. What were your thoughts on it, Nick?
I enjoyed it. I don't have a good background with Hawkman, so I didn't know how much of it was a retelling of his history and how much wasn't. I did very much enjoy a character who shows up later in the book that I won't reveal. It was one of my favorites to see, so that was fun as well. But yeah, I guess I'm learning about Hawkman through that book. Most of what I know about him comes from Dark Knight's Metal and how the Nth Metal and everything tied into that.
Yeah, there's not much of this. It's like we have, other than him being an archaeologist and him being able to fly, there's not much in here that's like, oh, I needed, like, that's from before. It's pretty much all new and fresh and very new reader accessible. And I had forgotten that character that you mentioned. I'd forgotten that you were a pretty big fan of her. I think you'd mentioned that to me before. She's in one of your favorite titles from the New 52. So that makes sense that you're probably
yes.
like, oh, she's in here? That's awesome.
That was my reaction. I was like, yeah.
All right. So my book of the week, Hawkman number one. Go out, pick yourself up a copy. Tell all your friends to pick up copies. Bug them until you made sure they picked up copies. And also pick up an extra copy to give to someone you know who doesn't read comics but loves like Indiana Jones, action-adventure-y kind of things. So we really need to support this title because this is the perfect way to show DC love for Hawkman, show them that we like the direction that it's going, even after only one issue, and bring Hawkman up to the level that he should be. I mean, he's a character that's been around so long, one of the very first DC Universe characters, and he doesn't get the love because of the continuity issues, I feel like. He should be a much more important factor, and his visual's cool, his power set's cool, he's a great character, so we really, really need to support this title. So do me a personal favor, if not yourself a favor, because you'll really enjoy reading it, and check out Hawkman number one. What do you have up next, Nick?
Well, actually, first, I got the tweet I was talking about. I was very close to what he said. He said, Brian Edward Hill says about using Batman or Superman and Michael Cray. Honestly, I avoided both Superman and Batman for Michael Cray because they're too obvious. Diana is there, and perhaps another someone from Metropolis might make an appearance. So that's the Michael Cray scoop.
What do you think, Luther?
That's a good pick, but he'd probably be a good guy in this case, which would be awesome.
Maybe. I guess we'll
that's
see.
That's right. Luther's already too fluid. He's like Constantine. It wouldn't be as interesting. Anyway, I got Mr. Miracle number 9 next. Written by Tom King. Artist is Mitch Gerads.
Gerads, yep.
Anyway, I read this one in one sitting also. So, again, we have Mr. Miracle, the continuing story of his Darkseid's son, right, who was raised by the High Father on New Genesis?
Correct.
Okay, and then, yeah. Okay, so he's trying to, and he's married to, married? Or he's with Big Barda, who was actually someone from Apocalypse, raised on Apocalypse.
Correct.
All right. So this is actually, it's a very timely book because it's about a very important summit between the people of Apocalypse and the people of New Genesis, which is actually something Tom King pointed out on Twitter today.
Little known fact, Tom King is responsible for the North Korea-U.S. summit, not Donald Trump.
Tom King did say that today, that it was a timely book this week because of that. But yeah, it's about a big summit to discuss, I guess, the terms of surrender or retreat or whatever you do in these kind of situations. They seem to have very odd rules, these new gods. There are also some fairly odd characters, these new gods, including a guy obsessed with Shakespeare. But it's a kind of a fun book. It continues to show, like, I don't know, this the absurdity of Mr. Miracle's life and just dealing with all these weird places and situations. And I know it's a controversial art style, but I continue to love the... Is it always 9 panel every page?
Yeah.
But yeah, I love it. Even though some of it, like people say, it's not moving or stale or whatever. Like, I love the art style. So this would be my number 2 pick of the week.
Yeah, I think that Mr. Miracle has been an absolutely incredible book. Like you said, I know that some people have complained about the art. Some people have complained about the story. You know, not every book is for every person. You vote with your pocketbook. And if we just look at the sales on Mr. Miracle, I'm thinking that most people like it. You know, it's a best-selling book. So, and these guys are really killing themselves to put out an incredible tale. It's very, like Nick said, topical, and it deals with a lot of themes that are close to Mitch Gerrits and Tom King personally. And I think the best kind of art, the best kind of stories, the best kind of comics draw on those kind of experiences. And Tom's always trying to tell, you know, find new ways to tell stories and be kind of experimental. And this book is no different in that way. So there's a huge, huge, huge moment at the end of the book that we really, really want to tell you, but we really, really, really don't want to spoil it for you. You need to pick it up for yourself. I feel like in a way, all the issue, like issues 1 through 8 and the first part of issue 9 are all leading up to this one moment. And the rest of the series will be about that moment and how it's resolved. So, incredible job by the creative team for sure. All right, let me talk about my next book. It is Man of Steel number 3. And again, we do the Superman Sunday Man of Steel spotlight. So for that reason, I'm going to be extremely brief when I talk about this book. And what I do want to say, I've talked before about Brian Michael Bendis on the show and his kind of decompressed storytelling style. You know, Ultimate Spider-Man's a good example of that. The story that was basically told in Amazing Spider-Man 15 took him 6 issues to tell in the Ultimate Spider-Man story. So I understand some people think that this is a little bit of a slow burn. I kind of feel like, especially based on the pacing from issue 1 and then the pacing and the amount of story we get with issue 3, issue 2 was like almost a treading water issue. We get much more of shifting into high gear in this issue. We get the big bad kind of being put in place. We get Superman kind of discovering. We get more of Melody Moore. We get Superman investigating the fires a little bit more. So again, I don't want to spoil too much. So I'm going to leave it at that. If you want more in-depth analysis, tune into our Superman Sunday episode coming up this next Sunday where we'll go much more in-depth. And the other thing I'll say is the Ryan Sook art. Yes.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to add one thing. As I love the art. The character looks so much different in the first pages of this than the last pages of number 2.
Yeah, absolutely.
The villain.
Absolutely incredible. And the little like a mini story we have going on within the story, which is usually, you know, 2 pages of Jason Fabok art. That's definitely tune in on Sunday to hear speculation about what may be going on there, because and you know, one thing that I haven't mentioned, and I apologies to Alex Sinclair, I haven't talked about the color work on this series at any point so far. That is a huge oversight by me, because the color work by Alex Sinclair has been amazing. It's not real primary, I'd say, but it's classic comic coloring that's really given this book a very classic feel. It's still sophisticated coloring, and you see that on the splash page of every issue. They've all been space scenes. You know, the first 2 had the planet Krypton surrounded, you know, by space and stars and whatever. This one is Earth, and it's just incredible. I really feel like it's some of the best work of Alex Sinclair's career. And there's been several times use of shadow, often in the burning or the remnants of the burnt buildings. The work by Alex Sinclair, bold colors, the reds and blues playing off each other. Incredible, incredible job, especially on the Jason Fabok pages, because those pages tend to be a little brighter, a little more detailed, like lightning going on and stuff. So yeah, incredible work by Alex Sinclair. And with issue 3, I feel like the story's really kind of shifted into the next gear, and we're starting to get a lot more forward momentum going. So I definitely enjoyed Man of Steel number 4. What do you have up next, Nick?
I have A Walk Through Hell number 2. by Garth Ennis. Ennis? I've never actually said his name aloud, even though I've read a lot of him.
Yeah, Garth Ennis.
Garth Ennis. Artist Goran Suzuka and colorist Eve Svorkina. I don't know. These are rough. These are hard and normal comic book names. And comic book names are already like the roughest names I've noticed compared to filmmaking or anything. But so this was the book last time that asked the question, what happens when two FBI agents enter a warehouse that two other FBI agents entered and were never seen again?
I can answer that. You know what happens? Nothing good.
Exactly. Can I even say what happened at the end of the last issue, or is that too much spoiler?
Yeah, you know what? Let's talk about that. But if you haven't read A Walk Through Hell number one, do yourself a favor and come back in 1 minute. We won't go longer than a minute talking about that crazy page. Go ahead.
All right. Everyone who else who went into that building shot themselves. They shoot each other. They shoot themselves right there in the back of the SWAT van.
They shot each other. They were sitting in the SWAT van, each of them aiming a gun at the person across from them. Like, all right, let's do this. They must have seen something pretty bad to want to do that.
So I guess spoilers over then. Nothing good happens when you enter this place. In this particular issue, it starts right after they've entered it, and they quickly realize even though they're awake, neither of them have a pulse. And I don't want to go into it too much because it's a fun book to kind of have unravel, but it gets weirder from there. Meanwhile, kind of cutting in between, it must be the past, a past abduction case. And they, like, there's a scene where they're talking about the current president, but not by name, and talking about the abduction case and what area it's in and stuff. So I'm not sure even how those tie together at this point. I won't spoil anything more about what happens in the warehouse, but it's an interesting read.
Yeah, it's very subtle. I mean, there is one image that's just like it.
It's on the cover, kind of the image you're talking about.
So this is for mature readers. Definitely not for the faint of heart. But there's one image, you'll know it when you see it, where you're just like, "Wait, what's happening?" And it's kind of that whole narrative is just weird, right? So
yeah.
That's not exactly subtle, that image and what's going on. But overall, like this, so far the narrative he's telling, we don't know a lot. But what we do know seems creepy and seems disturbing. And it's definitely a more subtle type of horror story. I'll leave it at that. All right. The next book I'm going to talk about, if I can find my list, is Sideways number 5. And let me give the creative team. Did I give the creative team for Man of Steel? I think I did as I talked about it.
I think you did as you talked about it.
Michael Bendis was the writer. Then I mentioned I don't know if I mentioned Ryan Sook was the artist. And then we had Jason Fabok's pencils as well. And then actually there were a few pages where Ryan Sook got an assist by Wade Von Grobiger for inks. And then, of course, we had Alex Sinclair, which I mentioned on colors. So Sideways number 5, written by Justin Jordan. We've got Robert Gill handling the art duties with colors by John Rausch. So New Age of Heroes book. This is kind of it's kind of a Spider-Man take, sort of. The New Age of Heroes, I've seen a lot of people talking about. They're kind of DC doing Marvel, like Damage is kind of like Hulk, Terrifics is kind of like Fantastic Four. Sideways is kind of like Spider-Man. It's a teenage kid. He's just got these powers. He's originally tries to use them to kind of make himself famous. And then this is really the turning point book where he realizes, I think after last time he had decided maybe to hang it up, didn't work out too well when he fought against somebody in the last issue. So he's kind of thinking about hanging it up. And then with what happens this issue, he decided, you know, didn't set out to be a hero, kind of set out to be famous. Then I thought, man, maybe I just want to be myself and be a normal kid. But he really kind of learns a lesson of responsibility in this issue. And so I think it's a good story arc so far, a good character arc for the main character trying to really come into his own and learn how to use these powers. And it's pretty realistic too. Justin Jordan talking about Derek and his friends at school, you know, kind of the bullies, and you know, his friend Ernie and her sister. So I feel like the dialogue is done well. It kind of rings true as the way teenagers would talk. I think the characters are interesting. I will say, not that it's bad art, but it's not. I mean, it was Kenneth Rocafort on the previous issues. So, you know, he's one of the most detailed, dynamic artists working in comics today. So it's kind of, you know, I feel like just about anybody following him is going to have a tough act to follow. It's going to be a little bit of a step down. But I think Rocafort's supposed to be coming back at least for one more issue. So I'm really enjoying it. It's probably my second favorite of the New Age of Heroes titles. Maybe after Damage. So, but you know, that's Robert Venditti. So there you go. And Terrifics has been pretty good too. But again, this is one of the really, really fun books. And I keep talking about it. I think I've talked about every issue so far. And usually I like to switch it up a little more often than that. But again, I just feel like it's not getting enough attention. And so I kind of want to throw a spotlight on it. So, kudos to the creative team. Sideways number 5 was great. I love to see the character growth from Derek, and really interested to see what happens next with him, plus with some of the other subplots that are going on. Looks like some stuff maybe about to hit the fan for Derek, so I'll leave it at that. What do you have up next, Nick?
I got Dead Hand number 3.
Great pick.
My second non-Big 2 book in a row, which for us means non-DC. So if you don't remember previously, Dead Hand is an interesting book because it's about a American city in Russia, isolated, and we don't know a whole lot past that, I don't think, at this point. They have some kind of computer system there. But this issue opens with my new favorite British operative, Ellis, who demands to follow up on a missing hitchhiker we know a little bit about from a previous issue. And from there, it just kind of shows us how difficult it is to get it in this place. We learn more about the characters that are living. What's the name of the... Does it have a name, this town?
Mountain View? Isn't that what they call it?
So, yeah. Yeah, they're, it's right there on the page, Mountain View. And so, I don't know, it's just... There are just a few really great pages in this book of Ellis on his way there. He's not even there yet, but like there's two great pages, like a double spread about his history that's like done in red with some blue and mostly black. And it's very like his James Bond type history. And then there's another, whenever I do action sequences, it's all in this kind of goldish yellow streaking across the page, and everything gets really dynamic. So it's probably the weakest of the three issues of Dead Hand so far, but I'm excited to see how this character Ellis plays in, because he's my favorite new addition to the series. So
yeah, I feel like, I mean, we say it's the weakest. This is a tough series to talk about because it does have so many spoilers. So it's hard for us to talk in detail about it. So, I mean, we can talk about, you know, it deals with the Cold War. It's definitely kind of a noirish spy thriller kind of situation. And we had Kyle Higgins on the show to talk about it. But again, it's one that's very hard to talk about just because you don't want to spoil it. But one thing we could say is that It definitely has like a Winter Soldier kind of feel, if you're familiar with that movie. You know, Captain America, certainly. Winter Soldier, it's that Cold War feel, it's that spy movie feel. So I definitely recommend it. The art by Stephen Mooney and the colors by Jordi Belair are second to none. Their detail, their color, the tone, the mood, everything is absolutely perfect. Like the montage page with Ellis, where he's sitting there on a chair in the middle with the scenes around him, that is just spectacular artwork. I mean, I'd love to have a print of that. It's just so good. So, yeah.
I forgot to mention the full team. So, writer Kyle Higgins, artist Stephen Mooney, colorist Jordy Belair.
And letters by Clayton Cowles.
Oh.
But yeah, I think it's an incredible book. I haven't heard a lot of people talking about it, in my opinion. I think Kyle Higgins is an underrated writer, in my opinion. Definitely recommend. Totally agree with the Knicks pick here. I don't know that it's the weakest. I think it's the slowest. Like every issue can't end with some crazy cliffhanger, right? I mean, you can only up the, you know, kind of raise the bar up so much, and then you know, it's just how stories.
Yeah.
The story has
to. I mean, insult the book in that way. Yeah. It's been so strong. This is kind of more.
Exactly.
A necessary lull.
Right. Exactly. You have to have the kind of the slower issues or the issues where you don't have the crazy cliffhangers in order to accentuate the, you know, the crescendos and everything. So yeah.
But it has a pretty good cliffhanger, I still thought. So.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's one of those cliffhangers that you kind of see kind of like you had an idea of that already and it's just kind of confirmed. So yeah, really, really great, great pick. Up next I have Bloodshot Salvation number 10. So this feels like we're getting to the down to the nitty gritty for Bloodshot Salvation. We know it ends with 12, so there's only two issues left for Lemire to finish telling his epic story of Bloodshot. It's been going on for about 3 years now. Bloodshot's in the future, and he made an agreement last issue with Baron Samedi to save his daughter's life, and now he got sent into the future, and he needs to assassinate somebody, basically. And so that's kind of where Bloodshot is at. Meanwhile, back in the real world, it kind of ties back into the beginning of Bloodshot Salvation. We saw two different narratives going on. In this issue, we start to see how those two narratives and two timelines start to come together. The pieces are being filled in. So I don't want to go into detail beyond that other than to say, man, only two issues left. I can't wait to find out how the story all resolves. And I just realized I forgot to give the creative team. Written by Jeff Lemire. Art by Doug Braithwaite, which is breathtaking and detailed and beautiful. Colors by Jordy Belair. Seems like she's everywhere, and I'm fine with it. Jordy Belair could color every single comic every single month, and I would be fine with that. She's so incredibly talented. And letters by Simon Boland. So really great story. Really cool thing that goes down with Bloodhound in this issue. And yeah, I'm only two issues left. I can't wait to see how it all resolves. And there's a little bit of a cliffhanger at the end of this one as well. So it's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out. All right, what do you have up next, Nick?
I got Plastic Man, number one. Writer is Gail Simone. Artist is Adriana Mello. Colorist is Kelly Fitzpatrick. And letterer is also Simon Boland. So you're going to have to help me again with this one. I have no history with Plastic Man. Is this like a retelling of his origin?
Is this a
new origin?
A little bit. It's kind of his classic origin. You know,
so it's not spoilery if I say I didn't know he was a criminal before.
He was a criminal. You know, was pulling a heist with his gang. You know, somehow got doused with chemicals. Got his stretchy powers. That's kind of always been and kind of decided to turn over a new leaf and fight crime. That's kind of his classic origin from way back when. You know, he's technically a Golden Age character. He's been around since the...
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
It seems like they're updating him too much here. He feels like the latest Harley Quinn books that I've read, as in he feels like a Deadpool type character in this book, which I'm not a big fan of.
Really?
Because the jokes don't land with me. I love Deadpool, but I don't like that. So Wang is one of the.
Yeah, that one was kind of.
And even like I know it fits his power set, but like, I don't know. It's weird. Some of his powers don't make sense to me based on what. I shouldn't be complaining about that element. So forget that. I'm not complaining about power sets, but I don't know. It's just a lot of the humor fell flat with me, and the origin was more interesting. But I was a little confused by it because I didn't know he was a criminal, so I thought maybe it was someone else. Experiencing becoming Plastic Man, but now it makes more sense. But yeah, just not the right humor. I don't know.
Wow, I loved it. Did you mention the creative team? Gail Simone,
artist
Adrian Mello, colors by Kelly Fitzpatrick, letters by Simon Boland. Yeah, I thought it was great. The That's So Wang thing, I didn't really land with me. I thought the art was absolutely incredible.
Oh, the art's great.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I come to expect great things from Gail Simone. And I feel like this book was a lot of fun, but it also has some heart behind it, which seemed, I mean, that could describe just about every Gail Simone title, except when she decides to do something completely different, like Clean Room or Red Sonja. But yeah, I feel like this has a lot of heart behind it. And I think, I don't know, I'm going to be curious to come back to it after, you know, maybe issue 3 or 4 to see if you're enjoying it more, Nick.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to keep reading it. So
yeah, because I thought it was exceptional. Really, really fun. But then I'm a big Plastic Man fan, so.
Again, like, it's the first book I read that he wasn't like more than like on a few panels. So,
all right, you have. Let's see, I only have one more.
I only have one more too.
Book to talk about. So, okay, so I guess I'll go to my last one, and it's actually a trade paperback. I just want to mention Slots, from Dan Panosian, written and illustrated by him, from Image. We just released yesterday, the spotlight on Slots from an interview I did with Dan at Phoenix Comic Fest. Please do yourself a favor. Go and listen to it. So the episode came out Tuesday morning. On my way to work on Tuesday, I listened to it. Even though I was there at the interview, and even though I had produced it the night before and heard snippets of it, I still put my own podcast on to listen to on the way to work on Tuesday morning. And I was smiling from ear to ear. That's how much fun the interview was. It's about a down on his luck kind of guy. He used to be a former boxer. Totally believes in luck. Totally believes in, you know, kind of fate. And it's a great story. Fathers and sons and relationships and friendships and fitting in and burning bridges. And most of all, redemption, right? And who of us couldn't use a little redemption, in their life? Really kind of snappy patter, witty dialogue from Panosian, which is really surprising given that he's only illustrated before. This is actually the first story he's ever written. The pacing is incredible, done really, really well. Again, Dan probably has an advantage on that over a lot of first-time writers because he has been doing comics for so long and telling sequential stories from the art side of things. But again, I just think it's masterfully done. I think it's a lot of fun. And I find myself wondering, man, why hasn't Dan written comics sooner? Because it was done so, so well. So the trade paperback comes out today, June 13th. Do yourself a favor, pick it up. It's a really fun story. It's one of those stories where you read it and you're like, yeah, so this is why comics exist. This is why sequential storytelling exists, to be able to tell really cool and fun stories like this. So it really gets my highest possible recommendation. So I'll call it my trade paperback book of the week, because I think it's so deserving of being picked up and read by everybody. So do yourself a favor and pick it up and go back and listen to that interview with Dan, because it was a whole heck of a lot of fun. All right, what do you have up last there, Nick?
I have The Weatherman, number one, written by Jody Leop, artist Nathan Fox, colorist Dave Stewart. Okay. Mars. The year is 2770. A lot of people seem to live on Mars because, I mean, this is the first few pages. The Earth was destroyed. The Earth's gone. So I can't remember if there are other colonies or not, but everyone seems to be living on Mars. And this book focuses on a particular individual, Nathan, who is the most popular weatherman in the Red Bay area. He's kind of a wacky fellow with a dog who, like, carefree, almost living a California lifestyle in Red Bay. Red Bay with 2 D's. And so, yeah, it's just the story of this, you know, carefree weatherman who does this, is loved by everyone until, you know, something sci-fi happens and pushes the story in a direction I don't want to spoil. So I recommend it. It's a really interesting art style for sure. Like, exaggerated, kind of reminds me of the way Legion is often drawn with his longer head and hair, the character. So, yeah, I don't know.
So he's just a, like, a regular average Joe weatherman.
Yes.
Except that he's on Mars.
Yes. But and the people, there doesn't seem he's like the popular weatherman because he's like the funny one, but bounty hunters or something show up for him, and that's where the story takes a turn. And why will shock you to the core.
Yeah, I've been hearing a lot of buzz about this book, actually. I didn't read it. It's the one book this week that Nick read that I didn't. But yeah, I've been hearing a lot of buzz, so I may have to check it out.
You should.
All right, so that's going to do it for this new Comics Wednesday episode. We'll finish up by running down the list of other books that we think you may want to be on the lookout for. There are a lot of great books this week. It was really tough to narrow it down. So let me go through real quickly. Aftershock Comics, we've got Animosity Evolution number 6, Baby Teeth number 11, which really starts the next chapter of that story. I imagine it'll be volume 3, but it really is like the second part. I feel like the first 10 issues were one big part of the story, and now we get a little bit of a jump forward. We've also got Betrothed number 4, and the aforementioned Walk Through Hell number 2. From Ask Ben Comics, I wanted to mention that Journey volume 3 number 4 is coming out from writer J.T. Krull. Also from DC Comics, in addition to a lot of the books we already mentioned, we've got Detective Comics, rather, 982. Only one more issue before Brian Edward Hill's run starts. Flash 48, which is part 2 of the Flash War, which was really, really good. I almost wanted to talk about that, but again, you know, have to cut some things. Also, Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps 46 was crazy. Again, Robert Venditti. Immortal Man number 3 continues that New Age of Heroes story, which is also really great. We had Suicide Squad number 43, as well as a Titans special number 1, which was really great, kind of a new direction for the Titans from Dan Abnett with Nightwing recruiting a new team. And that really spins out of Dark Knight's Metal and the Broken Source Wall, dealing with some of the consequences there. And we've got Wonder Woman 48 as well. Over at Image, Analog number 3 from Jerry Dugan was also very enjoyable. We had Bloodstrike 0 come out. I Hate Fairyland 19, Kick-Ass number 5 with art from John Romita Jr., Magic Order number 1, which is a big title from Mark Millar and Netflix. We had Oblivion Song number 4 from Robert Kirkman, Rose number 12 from Meredith Finch, and from Marvel, we had Deadpool Assassin number 1 of 6, Hunt for Wolverine Adamantium Agenda number 2, which we'll be talking about on the next Hunt for Wolverine Spotlight. We had Marvel Rising Alpha number 1, Marvel 2-in-1 Annual number 1. There's a new Thor number 1, as well as Venom number 2. And then finally, at Valiant Comics, in addition to the Bloodshot 10 that I mentioned, we have Quantum and Woody Deluxe Edition Volume 2 Hardcover. So that's going to do it. We want to thank you all for joining us as always. Don't forget, you can go to lrmonline.com for all past episodes of the podcast. Twitter.com/TheComicSource is where we can be found on Twitter. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three places are great spots to find when we release new episodes, as well as all our convention coverage. Quick reminder that Nick and I will be at Denver Comic Con this weekend. Please find us. We want to hook you up with a free lanyard. We want to hear what you think of the show, what you like, what you don't like, and get a picture and all that kind of great stuff. So thanks for listening as always, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.